What a fitting song after a testimony like we had this morning. Reading from 1 Samuel chapter 17, verses 4 to 18. And there went out a champion out of the camp of the Philistines named Goliath of Gath, whose height was 6 cubits and a span. He had an helmet of brass upon his head, and he was armed with a coat of mail. And the weight of the coat was 5,000 shekels of brass. And he had greaves of brass upon his legs, and a target of brass between his shoulders. And the staff of his spear was like a weaver's beam, and his spear's head weighed 600 shekels of iron, and one bearing a shield went before him. And he stood and cried unto the armies of Israel, and said unto them, Why are you come out to set your battle in array? Am I not a Philistine, and ye servants to Saul? Choose you a man for you, and let him come down to me. And if he be able to fight with me and kill me, then will we be your servants. But if I prevail against him and kill him, then shall ye be our servants and serve us. And the Philistines said, I defy the armies of Israel this day. Give me a man that we may fight together. When Saul and all Israel heard those words of the Philistine, they were dismayed and greatly afraid. Now David was the son of that Ephrathite of Bethlehem, Judah, whose name was Jesse. And he had 8 sons, and the man went among men for an old man in the days of Saul. And the 3 eldest sons of Jesse went and followed Saul to the battle, and the names of his 3 sons that went to the battle were Eliab the firstborn, and next unto him Abinadab, and the 3rd Shammah. And David was the youngest, and the 3 eldest followed Saul. But David went and returned from Saul to feed his father's sheep at Bethlehem. And the Philistine drew near morning and evening, and presented himself 40 days. And Jesse said unto David, his son, Take now for thy brethren an ephah of this parched corn and these 10 loaves, and run to the camp to thy brethren, and carry these 10 cheeses unto the captain of their thousands, and look how thy brethren fare, and take their pledge. We'll stop there and look forward to what Brother Ray has to share with us this morning. Let's kneel for prayer.
Good morning, everybody. I want to thank those of you who sat up front. Thank you for changing your seat, and you're welcome every Sunday. There's room up here. You're welcome to sit up here, and your children and adults will get a lot more out of it. The message is titled, David and the 10 Loaves of Bread, Part 1. David and the 10 Loaves of Bread, Part 1. Today we want to look at a historical account in the Bible of a real person named David against a real giant named Goliath. And the account includes 10 loaves of bread and Eliab, David's brother, and includes Saul and, of course, the giant. And the purpose of bringing this morning is to help us learn how to fight in the battle, because we also face problems. What do we do with the giants that come into our life? And you might want to keep your Bibles open to 1 Samuel 17, because we're going to be looking at this almost all the time. We're going to be looking at this. And so 1 Samuel 17, verse 4, and there went out a champion out of the camp of the Philistines named Goliath of Gath, whose height was 6 cubits and a span. Now, there have been people who studied this, theologians. What is a cubit and a span in our measurements? And it's believed it measures about 9 foot 9 inches. And so I have an object lesson here to help us see what 9 foot 9 inches is. Okay, so if you look up to the red, that's 9 foot 9 inches. So 6 cubits and a span, it's approximately 9 foot, it's not exactly 9 foot 9 inches to the top of the red tape. So that's how possibly, if we interpreted everything right, that's possibly how tall Goliath was. Now, the Bible doesn't say how tall David was. In verse 14, it says he was the youngest of eight brothers, so that can give us some clues. You had to be 20 to serve in the army. And since there was four brothers older than David who were not in the army, yet they were under 20, it's believed that David was anywhere from 12 to 15 years old. And I read that the average height of a Hebrew was around 5'4". And so probably a good estimate of David's height was probably about 5'2". And so you can see on this, the black and yellow, the black was probably about the height where David was. It's just an estimate. We can't say for sure. So for me, 4'7" is the big number, because that's how much taller Goliath was than David. So if you just imagine, no matter how tall you are, how short you are, you can take a stick or something that's 4'7", and you can see how much taller Goliath was than David. And then verse 7 it says, "And the staff of his spear was like a weaver's beam, and his spearhead weighed 600 shekels of iron, and one bearing a shield went before him." So it's estimated by those who know that the metal part of his spear, the end of the spear, was about 15 pounds. So 5 pounds of sugar or 5 pounds of flour, times that by three bags of sugar, 5 pound bags of flour. That was what on the head of his spear, that's how much it weighed. And then verse 5, "And he had an helmet of brass upon his head, and he was armed with a coat of mail, and the weight of his coat was 5,000 shekels of brass." So it's believed his coat of armor weighed 125 pounds. Can you imagine going around in something weighing 125 pounds? But it was because he was so big. And so sometimes people that are real tall are actually skinny, and they're not very strong. But going by these figures, he was as big, wide, I mean, in width, he was muscular. He was able. He was strong. And that's why in nature we have there's a lot of things named after Goliath. The Goliath frog, there's a frog called the Goliath frog. It's over 7 pounds and it's 13 inches long. There is a Goliath beetle. It's 4 inches by 6 inches. Imagine seeing one of those in your basement. And there's a Goliath spider that's 11 inches long. And we even use the word Goliath. We might say, the farmers against the seed companies, that's like a David versus a Goliath. Do we handle the Goliaths like David handled his? Each of us, we have to deal with problems in our life from time to time. So let's look a little bit deeper at these problems. We saw the size of the problems. I want to look at some of the effects and symptoms of the problem. The first effect is the giant in our lives will bring a cycle of advance and retreat, a cycle of advance and retreat. The Israelites were on one side of a valley or hill. The Philistines were on a hill on the other side. There was a valley between them. And Goliath would eventually come out from his side of the hill, and he'd come forward, and the Israeli army would come from their side of the hill and come towards Goliath, and he would say to them, verse 9, "If he be able to fight with me, bring forth a man, if he be able to fight with me and to kill me, then will we be your servant. But if I prevail against him and kill him, then shall ye be his servant and serve us." And the Philistines said, "I defy the armies of Israel this day. Give me a man that we may fight together." And that's when Israel's army would retreat back. When Goliath spoke, they ran back. And it says this went on for 40 days. We see a cycle of advancing and then retreating. In verse 20, "And David came to the trench as a host was going forth to fight, and they were shouting the battle cry." They were going towards the Philistines. They were shouting the war cry. exuberant enthusiasm for victory, shouts of the war cry, the chant. Verse 23, and as he talked with them, behold, there came up the champion, the Philistine of Gath, Goliath by name, out of the armies of the Philistines, and spoke according to the same words. And David heard them. In 24, and all the men of Israel, when they saw the man, fled from him, and they were sore afraid. Every day for 40 days, they went out with enthusiasm, with the war cry, and then they fled back. They were scared. They ran back with their tails between their legs. It reminds me already, I've been confronted by these little dogs. You know, these dogs that make a big rustle, just yapping at you. But like if you say boo to the dog, they scamper back with their tails between their legs. And so we see the Israelites. I mean, they were shouting war cries. They were advancing. And Goliath says boo. You know, and they just scamper back with their tails between their legs. The army of Israel. Every day they advanced, the giant brought confusion to the army, and they whimpered back for 40 days. So the first effect of a giant, it's going to bring a cycle of advance and retreat. The second effect of the giant is it will bring dismay. Verse 11. When Saul and all Israel heard these words of the Philistines, they were dismayed and greatly afraid. Dismay means they were discouraged. They lacked courage. To be dismayed included frustration. They were the Israelites. They were God's army. And now this heathen giant, they had no power over him. They were dismayed, discouraged, frustrated. This can't be happening. We got to do something, but we don't have any options. To face him, he's going to stomp us in the dirt. The enemy, the great problem, not only caused advance and retreat, confusion, but also caused dismay and discouragement. The third effect was fear. It says in verse 24, they were sore afraid. Sore, it actually means very. They were very afraid. His size brought fear to them. They knew his strength. They knew the size of his sword and his spear. They knew, at least they thought they knew, that against him, they're dead meat. These rough and tough soldiers, these men who were physically trained in fighting, they were very afraid. And this is an effect of the enemy. A cycle of advance and retreat, dismay, discouragement, and fear. The fourth effect was shame. They were humiliated. This pagan controlled them. It brought shame. The mighty Israeli army looked ridiculous. It was personal. He defied them to fight him, and every one of them refused, and so it was shame. It was a personal failure to fight him. This account of the giant and David, it seems hard to apply to our lives, doesn't it? What does 9'9" have to do with me? It's fascinating, but what can I apply to my life? But you know, this account has everything to do with us. It has so many applications. In our lives, we deal with advance and retreat. You are in bondage and you might advance, but then you retreat in defeat. Maybe you struggle with attitudes, bitterness, envy, pride, jealousy. You fight the giant, you advance, but just as quickly you fail and retreat. That's why we want to talk about David and the 10 loaves of bread. David's three oldest brethren were fighting against the Philistines. David was tending the sheep. In verse 17, and Jesse said unto David his son, take now for thy brethren an ephah of the parched corn and these 10 loaves, and run to the camp to thy brethren, and carry these 10 cheeses unto the captain of their thousand, and look how thy brethren fare, and take their pledge. Now Saul and they and all the men of Israel were in the valley of Elah, fighting with the Philistines. And David rose up early in the morning and left the sheep with a keeper and took and went to Jesse, as Jesse had commanded him. And he came to the trench as the host was going forth to the fight and shouting for the battle. Verse 22. And David left his carriage, and that means he left his food in the hands of the keeper of the carriage. That means the keeper of supplies. An ephah of parched corn is about 3 pecks of dried wheat. The 10 cheeses were to be given to the leadership, to the captain. But the parched corn and the 10 loaves was to be given to his brethren. The loaves would give them strength. They needed to eat of it to fight Goliath. Without food, they would become weak, malnourished. And to fight something over nine foot tall, it's hard for a healthy person. But if you lack nutrition and you get weak, it's all the harder. And so the 10 loaves would equip them to give strength to fight Goliath. Today I'd like to give you of David's bread. The enemy desires to destroy you, to destroy relationships, to destroy your spiritual life. The spiritual Goliath, Satan, he wants to kill us. And we need to be strong. We need to eat of the bread of David. As we study the account of David and Goliath, there is so much spiritual bread we can eat that will help with our spiritual fight against the enemy. There's so much application here for warfare. And the examples of David will strengthen us to fight, like the 10 loaves strengthened his 3 older brothers to fight. And so today we want to apply, in a spiritual sense, the 10 loaves of bread. The first loaf that we see from the example of David is the loaf of foundations. When you're nervous, it's hard to... Okay, the first loaf is the bread of a foundation. And if you're keeping an outline, it would be, our foundation is important for future victory. We think it's so neat what happened with Goliath. But the reality is that David's foundation helped with the victory. David's foundation helped with the victory. As a shepherd, he tended the sheep. It might have been boring, but yet in tending the sheep, he meditated on God and built a relationship with God. David, as he tended the sheep, he looked to the stars and meditated on God. Psalm 8, verse 3, when I consider the heavens, the work of thy fingers, the moon and the stars, which thou hast ordained. What is man that thou art mindful of him, and the son of man that thou hast visited him? David wrote Psalm verse 70. No, David didn't write this, but it said about David. He chose David also, his servant, and took him from the sheepfolds, from following the ewes great with young. He brought him to feed Jacob his people, and Israel his inheritance. So he fed them according to the integrity of his heart and guided them by the skillfulness of his hand. In tending the sheep, he fought and killed a lion and a bear. The events in his youth gave him confidence in the events of the future. We see as a youth, he was faithful in obeying his dad. He was responsible and willing to work. Verse 20, and David rose up early in the morning and left his sheep with a keeper and took as and went as Jesse had commanded him. It's not like at the battle against Goliath, David suddenly was inspired to follow God and suddenly inspired to get close to God. It doesn't happen that way. You don't have those spiritual moments. That how he felt when he was against Goliath was a result of his youth and the foundation that was strong. Do we want to build to win battles in the future? I want to ask us, what foundations are we laying now? Are we trying to live for Christ now? In the boring, in the uneventful? Do we seek his will and his ways now? Right now, are we reading his word and spending time with him and meditating? Is Jesus Christ number one in your life today? On Monday, Tuesday, and Wednesday, Goliath will come. He might come in the form of pornography. For some, he'll come in the form of torn relationships. He will come with doubts and discouragement. He's going to bring shame. He's going to bring fear and doubts. And how you respond tomorrow will be affected by the foundation you have today. Now, I know children love playing with building blocks. And we know from past experience that as you build higher and higher the blocks' future is determined by the foundation underneath with those building blocks. What kind of foundation do you have now? What have you laid? A.W. Tozer said, "Preparation is vital. Let this be noted by everyone. We can seek God today and get prepared to meet temptation tomorrow. But if we meet the enemy without first having met God, the outcome is in doubt. The issue is already decided. We can only have David's, we can only lose," he said. David's victory was due, in part, to the foundation that was laid. The second loaf of bread we need to eat to be spiritually strong is the loaf of encouragement. And if you're taking notes for an outline, I have down here, our encouragement of others is crucial for victory. Our encouragement of others is crucial for victory. Or we could put that in the negative. Our discouragement of others is a factor that will bring them defeat. We see David just arriving with the food in verse 22. Then in verse 24 to 30, "And all the men of Israel, when they saw the man," talking about Goliath, "fled from him and were sore afraid. And the men of Israel said, 'Have you seen this man that has come up? Surely to defy Israel is he come up. And it shall be that the man who killeth him, the king will enrich him with great riches, and will give him his daughters and make his father's house free in Israel.'" You won't have to pay tax. "And David spoke to the man that stood by him, saying, 'What shall be done to the man that killeth this Philistine and taketh away the reproach from Israel? And who is this uncircumcised Philistine that he should defy the armies of the living God?' And the people answered him after this manner, saying, 'So shall it be done to the man that killeth him.' And Eliab, his oldest brother, heard what he spoke unto the men. And Eliab's anger was kindled against David. And he said, 'Why comest thou down hither? And with whom hast thou left these few sheep in the wilderness? I know thy pride, and I know the naughtiness of thine heart. For thou art come down that thou mightest see the battle.' And David said, 'What have I now done? Is there not a cause?' And he," David, "turned from him towards another and spoke the same manner. And the people answered him again after the former manner." At first, I was wondering, why was David asking people what he would get? What reward he would get? Because I know David wasn't after a reward. Then I realized, I read it again, David had already been told what reward he would get. Evidently, as the men were running back to the camp, someone told him. But why then does he ask the soldier who is now beside him the same question again? And verse 26, "And David spoke to the men that stood by him, saying, 'What shall be done to the man?' And on and on. Verse 30, "And he," David, "turned from him towards another and spoke after the same manner. And the people answered him again after the former manner." And it seems he probably was doing this everybody he met. He was saying the same thing. Because it says that the word got out to Saul. So for it to get back to Saul, he was saying the same thing to everybody. And as I thought about the reason, it came to me, and I think it's pretty clear. The reason he kept saying, asking that same question and saying the same thing, this uncircumcised Philistine, he was trying to encourage them to take action and fight by reminding them of the things that they already knew. When you ask a question, you can stir up in someone's mind something they already knew. The question would bring inspiring thoughts to the soldier's mind that they would think about, and it would encourage them to fight. I'm going to get the king's daughter in marriage if I'm brave enough. I'm going to get a huge reward. My family, we're not going to have to pay any taxes. David was encouraging them to fight Goliath. But he also said, he was telling the men, who is this uncircumcised Philistine? We are the children of God. We are the Israelites. Who is this uncircumcised Philistine? He made them feel almost like they were this large foot city football team up against a little country team. Who is this team? He encouraged them by reminding them of who they were and who the enemy was. He also said that he, Goliath, should defy the army of the living God. Israel, God is on our side. Goliath is the enemy of God. He's defying our God. Let's go. Let's get him. And can you see him run over to another group and telling them the same thing? And then he runs over to another group and he keeps telling them the same thing. He was trying to encourage them to fight for their riches and the wife they would get and no taxes and for Israel's honor and for God's honor. And usually it works. Others can have victory by eating the bread of encouragement. It strengthens them to fight. Have you been there? Do you remember your discouragement? You were ready to give up in the fight against sin. Or you knew God was calling you to something, but you had doubts. And then a fellow soldier encouraged you. You can do it. You can overcome sin. Let me help you. If God's calling you, he will equip you. If God's calling you, he will give you the grace as you need it. Have you been there? Are you an encourager in the battle? 1 Thessalonians 5, verse 11 says, therefore, encourage one another and build one another up, just as you are doing. Hebrews 10, verse 24, and let us consider how to stir up one another in love and good works, not neglecting to meet together, as a habit of some is, but encouraging one another, and all the more as you see the day approaching. I remember the very first time I ever spoke publicly to this church, I might have been 18, I don't know, from this podium, and I remember I did terrible. I mean, I did awful. And I remember Harold Martin was sitting one of these benches. And after I was done prayer, Brother Harold slid over to me and he encouraged me. He said a short word of encouragement. And I really believe if Brother Harold wouldn't encourage me, because I was really discouraged how I did, if he wouldn't encourage me, I don't know if I would have ever spoke publicly again. If you're not encouraging others to win the battle, maybe you're on the flip side. Maybe you're a discourager. Look at verse 28. And Eliab, his eldest brother, heard when he spoke unto the man. And Eliab's anger was kindled against David. And he said, why comest thou down hither? And with whom hast thou left those few sheep in the wilderness? I know your pride and the naughtiness of your heart, for thou art You're just come down that thou mightest see the battle. Did you ever hear one sentence that's so dripping with negativity? He was angry at David. Why are you here? Implying he had no business being here. You're David, your only job is, you have a few sheep to take care of. Why aren't you, can't you even do that right? he mentions pride. And pride here actually means presumptuous. And that means overconfidently and inappropriately. Kid, you're going to be tending sheep. You really have a naughty, evil heart. What do you think you're doing by coming down here with us real men? You're just here, you're nosy. You just want to see the battle. David was giving severely discouraged words by his brother. But it didn't stop there. Look at verse 32. And David said to Saul, "Let no man's heart fail because of him. Thy servant will go and fight with this Philistine." And Saul said to David, "Thou art not able to go against this Philistine to fight with him, for thou art but a youth, and he is a man of war from his youth." This also from Saul, it's just dripping with negativity. Then the NLT says this verse, "Don't worry about this Philistine," David told Saul. "I'll go fight him." "Don't be ridiculous," Saul replied. "There's no way you can fight this Philistine and possibly win. You're only a boy. And he's been a man of war since his youth," unquote. Saul was saying, "David, put your head on straight. You are not able. You're just a youth. He's a man of war. He is an experienced man of war. He's a grown up. You're just a young kid." Saul, the leader, he should have been an encourager. But instead, he was trying to discourage David. Years ago, I read the biography of C.T. Studd. He's a famous missionary. And he felt the call of God to go to serve. He had a lot of Elibs around him. His older brother and mother discouraged him from going because his father had recently died. So you need to stay here. His wife was initially against him going. His financial supporters told him that it was too dangerous to go to the place where he wanted to go. His doctor said, "You can't go. You're not healthy enough." He was also a superstar cricket player at Cambria. He was a superstar cricket player. And it was interesting, the media even criticized him. The media in the articles in the newspaper says, him going, it's a waste of talent. And before he left, he famously quoted Micah 7 verse 6. "For the son dishonors the father, the daughter rises up against his mother, the daughter-in-law against her mother-in-law. A man's enemies are the men of his own house." And he always carried a postcard with him. It says, "If Jesus Christ be God and died for me, then no sacrifice can be too great for me to make for him." And he went on to serve Christ in China, India, and Africa. He went. David fought. But most times, the discourager sinks the person and they lose the fight. David wants you to be like him, to eat the bread of encouragement, to spiritually eat it and strengthen others, encourage them to go, to fight, to trust God, to equip them, to be who God wants them to be. The bread of foundation, the bread of encouragement. The third bread from David's example, and the last one we're going to look at today, is the bread of faith. To be stronger, we need to increase our faith. To have victory, we will be stronger if we increase our faith. David had faith that God would use him to kill Goliath. David was angry. He was angry that God was under reproach. And actually, That's the main theme here, as much as it is David's faith, that God was under approach. David realized that the fight wasn't about him. The fight wasn't about Israel. The fight was about removing the reproach against God. I'm going to read verse 26 from another translation. David talked to some others standing there to verify the report. What will a man get for killing this Philistine and ending his insults to Israel? He asked them, who is this heathen Philistine anyway, that he is allowed to defy the armies of the living God? Defy the armies of the living God. Defy in Hebrew is karof. And it means to bring reproach and bring shame. The living God, it's his armies, David is saying. The living God is under reproach. The living God, he's getting shame heaped upon him by the giant. In verse 45, David said to the Philistine, you come to me with a sword and with a spear and with a shield, but I come to thee in the name of the Lord of hosts, the God of the armies of Israel, whom thou hast defied. Defied, again, it means it brought the Lord under reproach and shame. David saw the army's fear. He saw their cowardness and the shame and dishonor. But in all this, he was sensitive that there was something much bigger going on. The sin was against God. God was the one who was being dishonored. It's almost like if I would have malaria and I would come to visit your family. And so while I come to visit your family, I'm laying on the couch, you know, with a washcloth on my head, and I'm taking anti-malaria medicine. I think I know what would happen. Probably the dad or the wife would come to me and say, Ray, I know you're sick. That's important. But there's something much bigger here. There's something much bigger going on. You're hurting our entire family. We're all going to end up with malaria. You're hurting all of us. It's not just about you. With Goliath, it wasn't just about the man. It wasn't about the army. It wasn't about Israel. This was about God getting defiled. And David knew he needed to act. And he had faith in God, that God would protect him. And his faith rested in past actions of God. Verse 37, David said, moreover, the Lord hath delivered me out of the paw of the lion and out of the paw of the bear. He will deliver me out of the hand of this Philistine. His faith was in God, that he was a personal God, that he loved David, and he was good, and he was faithful. As he was in the past, he would be in the future. You know, real faith always produces works. That's emphasized in James. His faith produced the works of encouragement to others. His faith gave him the courage to fight when others ran. It was through faith he picked up those 5 stones. And we see the step of faith in verse 40. And he took his staff in his hand and chose him 5 smooth stones out of the brook and put them in a shepherd's bag, which he had even in a scrip. And his sling was in his hand, and he drew near to the Philistines. Now, it doesn't say it here, but it's very possible. As the Israelites were on one side of a hill, there was a valley in between, and the Philistines were on the other side. It's very possible there probably was a creek at the bottom of the valley, and David probably went down to the bottom of the valley and got the stones out of the brook. And it says he walked, after getting the stones, he walked towards Goliath. Then said David to the Philistine, thou comest to me with a sword and with a spear, but I come to you in the name of the Lord of hosts. Verse 46, this day will the Lord deliver thee into mine hands, and I will smite thee and take thy head from thee, and I'm going to give thy carcass to the host of the Philistines, the carcasses of the host of the Philistines this day, and to the fowls of the air, and to the wild beasts of the earth, that all the earth, that they may know that there is a God in Israel. And all the assembly shall know that the Lord saveth, not with sword and spear, for the battle is the Lord's, and he, the Lord, will give you into our hands. And then verse after that happened, verse 48 says that the giant arose. David had been advancing on the giant. He was at the bottom of the hill. He was advancing, but now he sees Goliath. He arose. He stood up after David was done speaking. And it says that Goliath drew near towards David. But David also ran more towards the Philistine army and towards Goliath. Verse 48, and it came to pass when the Philistine arose and came and drew nigh to meet David, that David hasted and ran towards the army to meet the Philistine. And David put his hand in his bag and took thence a stone and slang it and smote the Philistine in his head, that the stone sunk in his forehead, and he fell upon his face to the earth. That must have been quite a sound. If I would drop that over, it'd make quite a racket. Can you imagine the sound that made? Verse 50. So David prevailed over the Philistine with a sling and with a stone, and smote the Philistine and slew him. But there was no sword in the hand of David. It's really possible, like I say, we don't know all the details, but had he went to the bottom of the hill, to the brook, and he was going up the hill, running towards Goliath. I thought about the dynamics of that slingshot, the shot. He was below Goliath, probably. Goliath was 4'7" taller than him. That means he had to have been shooting almost uphill. It's an impossible shot. You know, but nothing is impossible when God is involved, is it? Only a boy named David, a young man with big faith, a young man with big faith who was upset that God was under reproach, and he took action. I want to ask us, how is God under reproach in our lives? We should be upset how God is getting hurt through our own lives. Sometimes the enemy takes the form of gambling or immorality. Sometimes it's a form of unforgiveness and bitterness. Sometimes he takes the form of jealousy and pride and materialism. Maybe the enemy that is bringing reproach to God, that's defying God, is our apathy towards God, our pursuit of money, things, possessions. Think about how the enemy is getting reproached through our lives. Will we get upset? Do you have faith that God will help you destroy this enemy? God is good. He will help you, but like David, he expects us to take action. It might be the action of confessing to another believer or sister. It might be the action of praying, confessing. It might be the action of spending so much more time in Scripture. Your faith will bring the action of moving closer to God and destroying the enemy. Your faith will be the action that says, God, use me. Here I am. I'm not going to resist you anymore. Goliath in your life needs to fall. God is good. He will help you. David had been feeding the sheep at Bethlehem. It says that. But he left Bethlehem and he came to Shochan, where Goliath had been tempting them for 40 days. And on the 40th day, David had victory over Goliath. There was a person who was born in Bethlehem among the sheep. He traveled to the wilderness, and he was there 40 days. And on the 40th day, Jesus, the Son of David, defeated Satan in the battle of testings. Today, each of us, as we face Goliath, do we have that faith to put into action and defeat the enemy of our souls? Let's take the bread of David, the bread of his example, and allow it, as we eat of it, to strengthen us for the battle. The bread of our foundation, the bread of encouragement, the bread of a stronger faith. May God bless us as we fight the battle.